go. 906. Let's get Mike Lewis in here. We got a lot of news to talk about.
We have a lot of news.
Just make a lot of noise for 3 hours. Whoa! Now the Beach Boys.
All right. Well, there's a cool 15 seconds. Now what have we got?
Now we're going to check and see how many listeners are out there.
You did happen to listen to the traffic report directly preceding this, didn't you?
Is anybody out there?
I don't think so.
Nancy?
But you know
say
this,
hi
you
to
know
Nancy.
What this sound was, you know where the sound was recorded?
No.
On the freeway between Issaquah and Seattle. That's how quiet it was out there. 16 minutes. I think you probably made it here in about, what, 12?
You know what I did? I rode through 5 red lights. I pulled up.
To celebrate your independence from actual law?
Well, I pulled up. Let's be the only radio station in the country that has crickets under the entire 3-hour broadcast. What do you think? Can we do that?
Yeah. Sounds risky.
There may be a reason that no one else does it, but let's go for it.
Anyway, I would pull up, look at the red light, look both ways, and screw it. Just go through it. Yeah.
Well, you actually can legally in Washington State with a certain delay on a motorcycle. They finally changed the law. This has been the law in many states. But they finally changed the law that said, because if you've done this at night on a motorcycle and you're not triggering the thing that recognizes when a car is there, you can actually stop, look, make sure it's all clear, and then go ahead if, in fact, it's not being triggered by the sensor.
Hey,
so you actually may not have been, as much as you thought that was an act of rebellion, it may have actually been well within the bounds of the law.
Shoot. Will you give me the green light?
I always give you
the green light. The green light for driving! See what I did to you there?
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't expect that. Yeah, more noise for 3 hours. There actually is news. It's not as bad. Let me tell you something. It was so bad last year that we had the Joey hot dog eating contest.
Yeah, Joey Chestnut.
And we had it up there, and I narrated
He's from my alma mater.
Well, I know that.
It's our only national championship.
So we had him up, and I narrated the entire thing while it was going on. So,
did you?
Yeah, for people on the radio.
Can we just replay that, maybe, and go take the morning off?
We got news. We got the fact that Trump administration reversing the Obama's policy on affirmative action in schools. A hot topic. And Aaron, I'm not even going to try the last name, Dean from UC Berkeley Law, explains that Trump's administration is saying about the new rule.
This is guidance that the federal government gives to educational institutions that receive federal funds. The Obama administration said our guidance is that college universities have a compelling interest in having a diverse student body and may use race as one factor in admissions to benefit minorities. The Trump administration has rescinded that and said that they don't believe diversity is a compelling interest, and they believe that college universities should be colorblind in their admissions process.
Mm-hmm. Here's more. He says he isn't convinced the new policy will change as much.
If the Supreme Court adheres to precedent and continues to allow college universities to use race as a factor in admissions, the Trump administration shift in policy isn't going to matter very much.
Right.
It's not likely that this change in policy is going to have much practical effect by itself. However, the Obama administration was trying to push college universities to engage in affirmative action programs. The Trump administration is trying to use its influence to push them against having affirmative action programs.
Okay.
Yeah, so the Trump administration essentially returned to the Bush administration, directly prior to the Obama administration, essentially saying the guidelines, you ought not use any sort of use race in your, affirmative action. Because everyone forgets that affirmative action actually spreads broader than just race. It can be based on income and a variety of other things.
Mm-hmm.
What we usually are referring to when we say affirmative action is a racial preference.
Right.
And that is the thing that actually they are rescinding right now. But they're not rescinding a variety of other affirmative action guidelines.
So this case sort of comes up. The Justice Department in session said, we will hear the case. The DOJ will look into a complaint by a bunch of Asian students at Harvard. And the case is moving forward, going to court in October. They're saying, at Harvard, you're discriminating against us based on the fact that we're Asian. And we've asked you to give us information. The case is slowly making its way forward. She said Harvard said, no, we're not going to show you how we choose our students because that is, that's a system that we use and we don't want other schools to know about it. So they did send some papers forward for admission for the court case. They redacted a whole bunch of stuff. But the Sessions has said, you know what? we're going to support and look into this, and we believe that there is discrimination going on at Harvard and in some other elite schools against Asians, so we're going to sort of stand behind you. It was the Obama administration that dismissed the Harvard claim, and now it seems like these guys are trying to be far more aggressive.
So what happened in Harvard actually was this, that the Harvard was caught out essentially. So you can have a variety of standards by which you would judge a student to come into your school. Yeah. And one of them is this whole personality component.
Oh, yeah, this is good.
And the personality component, like the Asian students, many of whom were rating exceptionally high in a variety of the other things, from GPA to extracurricular activities to, you know, whatever your the programs you were involved in outside of school, mm-hmm. things like that. Test scores were high. They were getting routinely graded low on the personality end of things, and that was a way. Now, it wasn't that Harvard doesn't have a substantial number of Asian students. It was they
20%.
The rumor was that, or the suspicion is that, Harvard was trying to reduce that oversubscription of Asians essentially so they could allow a quasi-affirmative action program in place to allow mm-hmm. other folks into the school,
right.
But they got caught out badly on this because it was pretty clear that they were routinely mm-hmm. Grading Asian students low on the personality scale just to give them some sort of disqualifier or reduce their point total
right.
before admissions.
Yeah, that's right. They did a 2013 study, and they basically squashed it once they found out that, gosh, it looks like we are. It is weird that they do kind of score you on spunk. They said a lot of the Asian kids just yeah. aren't outgoing enough or fun enough, so then they give it to some other kid because – and there's an entire industry out there, one of them in particular in Massachusetts. I forget the name of the group. They help admissions. They say it's – we people pay us so that we can help make it look like the kid is less Asian than he actually is. And they give it – tell you different things that you're supposed to put in your application, because if you're an Asian American, you come off as somebody that just sort of – top grades, top scores, top everything.
Right.
But and you play the violin and you were in this. You want to highlight some activities that seem less Asian so that maybe you'll come off as more interesting and spunky.
Yeah, it was. It definitely was not, you know, but the thing with Harvard and a lot of the elite schools,
yeah.
if we're going to discuss affirmative action, is what is the program referred to as specifically as affirmative action for the rich?
Yes, that's
right. And actually, the school you went to is one of the preeminent users of this.
I went to many schools. Which
well,
one are you referring
Villanova,
to?
Right? You went to Villanova,
I went to Villanova
for
yes.
a period of time?
Yes.
It's the Legacy Program.
Yes.
And the Legacy Program is this crazy idea that because your parent, I don't know if they extend it beyond just parents to uncles and aunts, but because your parent went to the school, you have something like a 47% better chance of getting into the school,
yeah.
which has been referred to as, I mean, we have a president who got in based on that. And this is the idea that there's a group of people who hate affirmative action, but will go to the match defending legacy program. But a legacy program is effectively affirmative action.
Yes, it is. In fact, a great piece speaking about Harvard and the other elite schools said what happens is that the biggest swath of incoming freshmen are legacy.
Right.
Or like Jared Kushner, his dad wrote a check for, I think, $2.5 million,
yeah.
plus made other additional donations and things to senators that were writing
Having
letters.
Having a building in your name does actually really help your offspring's chance of getting admitted into the school,
right.
regardless if they completed high school.
Right. I'd look at it this way. Don't, because if those that have come through, having their parents come through, the median income is $500,000. That those kids are coming from Harvard parents or Yale parents. The parents make a ton of money. The kids get in as well. So it closes off the circle. So they take out a lot of seats for other maybe middle class white kids or Asian kids that don't have a whole lot of money. They take the majority of those seats, and then it becomes a closed loop where no one else can
you
get
You eliminate
in.
The legacy idea,
yes.
and you actually have done a lot to open up a whole bunch of seats. Here's the interesting thing for people who really hate the idea of race-based anyway, affirmative action programs. They have, weirdly enough, one of the states regarded as most liberal in the nation to thank, and it's California.
That's right.
With Proposition 209,
right.
which effectively ended it in the UC system. But here was the smart response to that, because they realized that I mean, everyone on both sides of the affirmative action issue realized that it is the incorrect tool for trying to address an actual problem. and the actual problem being that disproportionate groups of people are advantaged getting into school, whether where they went to school, their legacy programs, blah, 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 blah. So what they did, the response to this was they created a program by which the top 10% of any high school in California was eligible for the UC system.
That's
if you
right.
graduate in your top 10%. And so the nice thing is, like, a predominantly African-American school in South Central LA, a predominantly Latino school in Fresno actually had the same, potentially could have the same number of applicants into the UC system.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually did jump numbers in most categories. Some categories are still not doing as well as others, but this actually was a way to make it regionally based,
yep.
high school based, but not specifically race based. But you make it, you know, if you go with the rich schools and the poor schools, you actually add an economic component that's pretty great.
Right.
And it seems like that's a program that has some merit, although it still has, there is still some problems associated with it, but it's not bad.
I looked at the numbers before they came in there with the proposition to get rid of using race for admissions. And Asians represented 18%. Once they eliminated it, they soared up to 43%. And they said, oh, no, that's just because more are applying. No, you were discriminating against the Asian kid before. And then when you weren't allowed to discriminate against them at UC Berkeley, you have 43% of the kids that are in there are Asian.
Well,
it's like very similar to what they did at Harvard against Jews, right, in the 20s and
30s. This is how the legacy program started.
Yeah.
Was exactly targeted at reducing the number of Jews going into school.
That's right.
But the Asian student thing is actually a fairly complicated formula because it also coincided with a massive influx of Asia overseas students and the schools, which is a separate schools issue, aggressive recruiting mm-hmm. of students overseas because they get so much more tuition out of them than they do from local students. And so that's actually kind of a complicated number. It's not as totally associated with Prop 209, but definitely Prop 209, the passage of it had a very interesting effect on sort of the racial breakdown yep. in schools in California.
Jerry Brown tried to come in and reverse all of it, and luckily they were to hold everything in place. I think you don't base it on skin color. Base it purely. You base it on social economics. If somebody comes from a really poor family, white, black, brown, doesn't really matter. Look at that. Don't look at skin color. I mean, certainly you wouldn't. Would Barack Obama's kids get an advantage over some white kid because even though they've got all that money?
But the bigger question, actually, I think for me and for the six or seven people listening today.
Nope. Down to two.
Six or seven.
We're down to two.
Down to two. Is if schools went on a personality test, how would John Curley score?
Oh, my God.
How would you score? Do you think you would be more likely or less likely? And if more likely, would it have been a party school?
Let me tell you
something.
Let me tell you what I did.
All right.
Okay. So I graduated third from the bottom of my class. I cheat on my SATs and I get caught. All right. That's not good.
Two strikes. Who are the two people below
you? Two strikes again.
Were they friends of yours?
Both of them were unable to walk, as they call it, walk on graduation, because they were both doing time in juvie for a Grand Theft Auto.
So you effectively finished the bottom of your class.
Not what?
With two people who are not existent.
Okay, technically, they were below me.
All right.
But they happened to not be there that day. So then they didn't point that out. By the way, by default, John Curley is graduating from the lowest of his class. No, two kids below me.
Okay,
so that's one strike against you.
Right.
And then the other SATs.
You cheated on your SATs.
Cheated on the SATs and got caught. That's two strikes. But the beauty of it is Ithaca College had a poster that they had hung up at the high school counselor's office. And it was a kid holding a football, a soccer ball, books, a tennis racket, a microscope, goggles, I mean, a bicycle. The kid had all of this crap on himself, right? He had like a raccoon skin cap. I mean, he had
everything. Letterman's jackets.
Letterman's jackets. Yeah, yeah.
And lab had, coat.
Right, and a polo shirt right. and Dockers. And he look at me. I'm at Ithaca. Look at all the stuff I do, right? Okay. So I took a picture almost exactly like that. And Brother Benedict, the principal, helped me take the photo to gather up all the stuff. And I included that photo to my application to Ithaca College.
And
boom, I got in.
Well, there you go. So that was the personality thing. You actually oversampled on the personality.
Yes, I did. Well, you know what? Here's a weird. Do we have time for a quick story?
Yes. We have all the time.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I think we'll be okay.
I mean, can we fit it in?
It doesn't even have to be a quick one.
Can we fit it in? Do we have time? We do. We can do this. Andrew, can we do a quick story? Can we? Yes or no? I know we're up against the clock.
You can.
Okay. Limit it to an hour, John.
So my guidance counselor says to me, hey, you got crappy grades and you cheated on your SATs. The only way you're going to be able to get into college is if you get into a thing called a conservatory. So the conservatory will get you in.
Isn't that in Clue?
Is it? Yes. That's where the lady got hit in the head with a candlestick.
Candlestick.
Right. I got into that. I just had to look at the candlestick.
That's such terrific advice from a...
God!
Did he also tell you, if you land on a property, make sure you buy it?
Even Baltic Avenue. I said, so what do you mean? Okay, you really? We're going to laugh at my college career? Hang on.
Yes.
Andrew, can I have 2 more minutes? Because I've been interrupted.
You've got 2 minutes.
So I don't have good grades. He says, if you get into the conservatory, the college has to accept you. Do you dance, sing, act, play any musical instrument? Can you paint? Can you sculpt? Can you do anything in the arts? Because if you get into the arts school, the rest of the school has to accept you. I said, I don't have any of those qualities. He goes, well, you know what? There's a play coming up in about a month from now. Why don't you try out for it? It was called Inherit the Wind. So he goes, if you get in the play,
with it, yeah.
Yes, if you get in the play, well, maybe then you could apply to get into a conservatory, like with one play under my belt. So I try out and I get the part of E.K. Hornbeck. Okay. Something happens to a man like Drummond, becomes a balding orphan, an aging adolescent, the redheaded stepchild, the teenager that never got the biggest piece of candy. Okay. That's the line from that. And it gives you some idea how good I was. Okay. So then I go to fill out the application for Ithaca College. And it says, what plays have you been in? Well, I can't just put E.K. Hornbeck in Inherit the Wind because there was a whole bunch of additional space. So I went to Ludington Library in Bryn Mawr and I got a book called Leading Roles for Young Actors. I wasn't going to get like the second role. I mean, the leading roles. And all I did was open the book and write down every single leading role.
I was in 75 plays.
And I happened to get the lead in every one. So I wrote them all down, made sure they were male characters. That's the research I did. And I go to New York City to the Taft Hotel.
You are so lucky you grew up pre-social media. You would have been caught out in about 14 seconds.
I'll tell you what happened. When I got to the Taft Hotel at 77th and 7th Avenue on the 7th floor, when we come right back. Is there anybody out there? The audience have won on the edge of their seat. Plus, we have other news to get to as well. What do you think happened?
We don't have other news to get to.
Yeah, I got another page.
Oh, that's right. There is
Jacob's
another page.
Jacob's in here for this.
That's true.
By the way, who do you feel more sorry for? The four of us or the people listening?
I always look, if I'm feeling sorry for somebody, I'd start with me and then move onward.
So bye-bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to
gonna play the whole
levee,
thing.
But the levee was dry. And then good old
only, oh, actually,
there is
the
a couple
thing.
Different versions of it.
Is there really?
Yeah. There's the extended version, which I'm guessing we have plenty of time for today. Although we do have to finish your story. Could you recap the last 5 minutes of it and then
yes.
we can roll in?
By the way, it's Don McLean.
Two big songs he had. This one and Vincent.
I talked to a guy that has done sound at different venues all around the United States. And I said, who is the worst performer to deal with? I said, no, I'll start with a positive one. Who's the best performer you ever dealt with? He said, Cyndi Lauper is the nicest person in the world. The sound check was easy. She was incredibly fun. She spent time with all of us, learned all of our names. She was the nicest person. I said, who was the worst?
In the gym.
Absolute douchebag. The guy was horrible to everybody, screaming and yelling during the entire sound check. Was Don McLean.
Wow.
There you go.
You know who actually I had heard that about
who?
Was John Denver.
Oh my God. Did I return the John Denver story?
There are some horror stories about John Denver.
Oh my God. Can I tell my John Denver story? Do I have a minute?
Got tons of minutes.
Wait, you're still like a story in arrears. We got a story in
should
a holding pattern right now.
Should I finish
the first story?
All right, fine.
Then we'll go on to John Denver.
All right. Yeah, well, I don't want to feel sped up. I don't want to get to. Okay. So I.
Or incorporate John Denver into that first story.
I will. So I don't do well in high school, and I want to get into college. So my professor or my guidance counselor says, apply to a theater school. I've only done one play. So then I go to the library and I get a book on leading roles for young actors, and I fill out my application with 18 leading roles. I get to New York City at the Taft Hotel, walk into this giant hotel room, a big ballroom, and there's a table with 8 professors, men and women, sitting behind the thing. And you walk in, and you're about like 20 yards away from them. They stop you right where you are, and you're standing on a piece of carpeting, and then they say you can do your dramatic monologue or you can do your comic monologue. Which one to do first? I do comic, and then I'm halfway through my dramatic, and they stop me. And the guy says, oh, Mr. Curley, you've seemed to have been in an awful lot of plays. And I said, yeah, I have. Oh, okay. And he's perusing it. Oh, you were Red, and when you coming back, Red Rider. I'm thinking, oh, boy. And he goes, so, yeah, tell me about the relationship with you and your sister, and when are you coming back, Red Rider? I said, well, as you can tell from the title, he was irresponsible. He never told anybody when he was coming back. It was like he would leave, and then no one knew, so his sister was always like, when are you coming back, Red Rider? Because that's all I had to go on. And the guy goes, uh-huh. How'd you, with the second act, it must have been difficult for you. And I said, well, not necessarily. He goes, well, it would be because Red Rider doesn't have a sister. And I went, true. That's true. But it's a choice I made. He goes, okay. And then the other guy pipes in and picks up my application with the thing on and holds it up like it's a piece of toilet paper smeared in feces.
Right.
And he says, how many of these plays have you actually been in? I said, I was in Inherit the Wind. That's at the top of the list. I was E.K. Hornbeck. And the rest, I said, I got a book. And I just filled in as many as I could possibly fill in. So you've only done one play? And I said, yeah. He goes, and you're applying to Ithaca? And I said, yeah. And then I broke down in tears and explained to them I have dyslexia. I didn't get diagnosed until my senior year. I cheated on my SATs. And I graduated second from the bottom of my class, and this is the only way I can get in. And they said, thank you. And I turned around and walked out.
And?
4 weeks later, I get a thing. Congratulations, you've been accepted into the Bachelor of Fine Arts program to Ithaca College. I arrive at Ithaca College, and I'm sitting in the counselor's office, and he leaves for a minute to go to the bathroom. I look over, and there's my application, the one I had taken to New York. And it's got lines and writing all through it. And then it says at the bottom, zero experience. And then they crossed out all the stuff that I've been on. But then it says, blonde hair, blue eyes, strong jawline, great leading role man, great leading role, not gay. And that was circled and exclamation point. Boom! Got in for not being gay.
Wow.
How about that one?
There you go.
And then after getting in there, everybody thought I was gay. I got in there not being gay.
I'm kind of wondering what the lesson is here. but all right then.
All right, John.
Can we move on to John Denver now, please?
Find some John Denver music. So I was doing a show in Washington, D.C. called Broadcast House Live, the worst morning television you could possibly put together from 10 to 11 with myself and Robin Young. We would have stars on their way down that would come on the show, right? Yeah. Robert Palmer, remember him? Might as well. He sat in the green room. He had come up with his own album. He had released it. He was trying to make a comeback. He was sitting in the green room, scheduled to come on. He watched the first 10 minutes of our show. He said to his agent, because the makeup artist told me later on, I don't care how desperate we are to sell this album. I'm not going on that GD show.
Right.
And with that, he stood up and ran out and got in the limo and rode away.
It was a smart move.
Right, Robert Palmer. Right. Died later on. John Denver comes on. And John Denver and I are sitting there, and I said, you know, I said, I love all of your songs. I'm a huge fan. I know how to play the guitar. Sunshine on My Shoulder was the first song I learned without a capo, G, C, G, C, D, C. And he goes, yeah. And he's looking at me. And I said, but that one song, I love the one song. So close your eyes tonight. Let it be me. Not just a fantasy. Let it be me tonight. And he goes, it's not so close your eyes. I said, oh, I'm sorry, what? I said, it's not so close your eyes, it's don't close your eyes. And I went, oh. He goes, why would you say so? So close your eyes, let it be me, not just a fantasy, doesn't make any sense. And I went, oh, okay. Well, it's one of those misconstrued lyrics, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So close your eyes tonight. He goes, I didn't sing so, I said it's don't. And I'm like, okay, wow. And then with that, he turns to me and goes, why are you wearing glasses? So you can appear more intelligent? That's what he said to me on the air. And with that, we came back from a commercial break. He refused to sit next to me, and he sat next to Robin and had a chair in between us. Awkward.
Yeah, that is awkward.
So I felt like...
Why did he wear his glasses? Did you ask him that?
To try to stop the smell of alcohol, the alcoholic vapors coming out of his mouth from tinting his glasses.
So you do know, you've heard, you know who Joe Walsh is, I
yes,
assume.
Yes, yeah.
Right? You know, he has a song, one of his popular songs, Rocky Mountain Way.
Yes.
Which was about spending a weekend at Hunter Thompson's place in Woody Creek, Colorado, when Hunter Thompson was firing shots at John Denver's place because he hated John Denver so much.
Really?
He actually unloaded with some... He had a lot of high-powered weaponry, and he started shooting at John Denver's property because John Denver made him angry so frequently. And you could hear read the lyrics. It's funny, and he actually references his weekend out there taking shots at John Denver's property.
Did they mention John Denver's property?
They talk about shots fired, blah, blah, but he's referencing that story because it's kind of a famous story up in Woody Creek.
Yeah. That turned out to be...
John Denver's not been a terribly popular guy. I knew someone whose close friend actually had to go on was one of those sort of, you know, junior level handlers for a publishing company.
Okay,
you know, they make you travel with whomever it is and, you know, to their hotel room and to the events and things like that. And she had to travel with John Denver, and she said the guy was just a creep.
Yeah.
And he had this weird group of, because he's obviously at this point, I think he's in his 50s, maybe 60s. And I don't know if he got to his 60s because he died in the plane,
right,
in that plane accident.
Decapitated.
He had this weird group of groupies that used to follow him from city to city to city and would show up at the hotel late in the afternoon, you know, after his events, like every time, like where you got to know the groupies all on a first name basis because they were showing up at all of the shows.
She said, but
he was kind of a miserable guy. At that time, he was drinking a lot.
Yeah, drinking a lot.
He could get pretty abusive.
But the weird thing was, he looked like such a nice guy.
Right. And his songs are saccharine sweet, right?
Yeah.
And yet, you know. But then James Taylor suffered from some of those problems, too. Yeah. And also had very
sweet
songs.
Got a heroin problem.
And that's the news today.
This is the So Close Your Eyes. Don't close your eyes.
I don't remember John Denver has a song
There's
with the sax.
Tenderness that I feel very real, you see.
Yeah.
Wow, this is a terrible song.
I can
awful.
Feel your body stir so deep within.
Why did you bring this song up?
This is one of my favorite songs.
You gotta be kidding me.
No.
Completely.
And I thought he'd like that I knew it. Here comes the refrain.
You clearly didn't, though, right?
Really missed the one thing. Here it comes.
Don't close your eyes tonight. Just let it be. See how many times I cry for you. Don't close your eyes tonight.
The don't is pretty distinctive.
Let it be me. Not just a fantasy. Let it be me.
I thought I would get credit for knowing the song.
I kind of won. John Denver clearly knew you had selected one of his worst songs.
No
and probably
way!
Thought you were making fun of him.
No.
Two, it's awfully clear he's saying don't. And three, he's totally right. The song makes no sense on So Close Your Eyes, Let It Be Me. It actually makes zero sense as a result.
Back it up, Andrew. Back it up.
He thought you were absolutely making fun of him.
So you're saying his anger was justified?
Totally justified.
Get to the part of don't and so.
Can we run this with the cricket sound?
Yeah, I can. Here it comes again. Here he goes.
Someone else is in your mind.
Oh, yeah. Now that I hear it, it should be don't.
Yeah.
Don't close your eyes tonight.
Sorry, John, wherever you are.
Just look at me.
Without your head.
See how many times I cried for you. Don't close your eyes tonight. Almost heaven, West Virginia.
Oh, this is old John Denver.
Blue Ridge Mountain, Shenandoah River.
Right, here we
so
go.
Much of a better song than the one that you so close your eyes.
Yeah, boy.
That's a terrible saxophone.
and John Denver. That's just not a good fit.
By the way, at your bar, again, because FCC rules and regulations say that we have to mention
that
it.
You have to mention it.
Yeah. I'd like to get it out of the way early. do you have John Denver on the jukebox?
We have John Denver on the jukebox. Of course we do. By the way, people actually do almost like they do with, you know, a couple of Journey songs. They sing along to John Denver. You'll find crowds of people break out in song along with John Denver.
There is a problem. There was an alligator that trapped a teenage girl in a tree. Alligators, I think, can run 35
miles
an hour.
As we move on to more serious news.
We haven't covered any news
yet.
That's
true, yeah.
So this is the story, of course, and when Jacob pitched it, and then it mentioned it was Florida, of course, Mike Lewis then said, of course it was Florida.
No, yeah, exactly. Of course it's Florida, right.
Here's the audio tape, the 911 tape of the mom who made her daughter, who said that her daughter was stuck in the tree, chased by an alligator.
And he says she's stuck in a tree. She got in the tree to get out of the water. There's gators on land and in the water right on her. Oh, my God. Please hurry. Please
ma'am,
hurry.
Ma'am, I'm getting the call in.
You're going to die. That's what I did. You're going to die. Please hurry up.
Okay, I've got my marine unit that's heading out there. Is there any neighbor in the area that owns a boat that could help you?
Owns a boat?
She was in the water when this happened, and then she climbed in the tree from a boat.
Okay.
The gator was coming up on her. She was in a canoe or a float, some sort of flotation thing.
Okay.
And then climbed up in the tree from that. So she's actually over the water.
Oh, she is. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody out here. I'm out here to swim and camp.
Okay. Well, ma'am, at a time like this, I would ask somebody if they're a stranger.
Yeah. That's the old thing. It's, you know, you don't have to own a boat. Just have a friend with a boat.
Exactly.
That's
in this case, you kind of want to own
say.
A boat, though.
I thought that's what the lady was going to say.
You don't need a boat. Like this. Yeah, they're expensive. You know, she'd go on the story. You know the two best days of a boat owner's life? Completely. This is what you would do as an emergency responder. You know, I got this story about a
Here's
boat.
Right.
Did I tell you about the boat that I'm on?
Here's where she could slip that in.
Like this, I would ask somebody if they're a stranger.
And I would ask that stranger what was the happiest day of their life, and that a boat is nothing more than a hole in the water you throw money into. Okay, give us a happy ending to the story.
The happy ending to the story is I would, if I could paraphrase the NRA line, the way you stop a bad alligator with a big bite is a good guy with an AR-15.
And that's exactly what happened.
And that's what happened. One shot, the alligator submerged, and then they found it dead later.
There you go.
It was a female alligator. Apparently, they were near its nest.
Oh,
it had laid
that
eggs.
Explains it. All right. Well, now she's orphaned those eggs.
Those eggs.
Come right back. More news. In fact, you'll get all of it right here in the Cairo Radio Tom and Curly Show with Mike Lewis filling in.